Hi, and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro. Today, episode number 221, and I'm back after last week's show. I'm motivated to talk about physical therapy, health, and performance. And if you haven't yet caught last week's show, which was episode number 220 with my friend and colleague, Amy Pakula, we talked about evolution in physical therapy practice. And I think it's just some fascinating information, whether you are a therapist, a trainer, a coach, or someone who receives those kinds of services. There's quite a few pearls in the air. Again, shout out to Amy for coming on the show. These are also exciting times right now at the Lifetime Athlete with our training tribe. T2 is entering the strength block. That's a three-month block where we train February, March, and April, focused on developing strength and, to some extent, muscle hypertrophy. So we're banging and clanging in the weight rooms and the gyms and the home gyms and getting it done. A lot of great fun there. If you're interested in joining up with us, you can check out the Training Tribe menu item at thelifetimeathlete.com and get a little more information about what it is that we do and how we manage this year-round online coaching and training platform. We're still running the great t-shirt giveaway here on the podcast for the best review, or at least the one that I deem so. So if you'd like to get yourself a free t-shirt, and you can go back a couple podcast episodes and find out what the backstory is on a lot of the slogans and sayings that we have on the shirts, or you can check out the shop page at thelifetimeathlete.com. You can get yourself a free shirt if you want to jump into that contest. Also, if you like the podcast and you want to support what I'm doing here, you can purchase coaching and training services right off thelifetimeathlete.com, or you can make a donation there as well. And that's just like doing it on Patreon, except we got rid of them as the middleman. Okay, today I'm going to start out answering some questions and responding to some kind words from listeners regarding my shoulder rehabilitation journey. And so the short story behind that, you know, I've mentioned it multiple times before, but last year I had an accident, which was kind of like the final straw in a journey of my shoulder, and ended up having to have a major reconstruction, which included some bone grafting, some tenodesis or tendon transfer procedures, as well as a total joint replacement. And I'm in the midst of that process. So that's what I'll talk about, first of all. And then I think I'm going to address a couple of interesting concepts in the global athletic journey for all of us, which, and these things will potentially apply to each and every one of us, but I'll also give you a personal spin on the topic. So jumping right in, and again, this is responding to some great queries that I've had from you guys. Thank you for that. I am now in a functional restoration phase with my shoulder. So that's my dominant right shoulder that I had surgery on. I try to remember the date now. It was September 30th. So I'm out of the maximum protection phase as well as the minimum protection phase. And I'm currently working on restoring range of motion. And so a lot of times in the, you know, therapeutic realm, we think about range of motion as passive, like how far can your limb be moved? And then active, how far can you move it under your own volition or muscular control? So passively right now, I'm about 80% in most planes, and actively at about 60%. So it's coming along. It's actually not surprising to me, but it's very slowly, very gradual, and certainly not overnight in restoring that range. I've also begun to work on strength, and it's kind of humorous in a limited capacity, but you know, with my arm at the side, you know, primarily working on grip strength and elbow flexion and extension. Those facets are regaining for me rapidly, but using my deltoid muscles and my rotator cuff, even the prime movers like pecs and lats, it's fairly pathetic yet. I'm just not there, but that's okay. I'm working at it, and it is gaining. It's moving in a positive direction, and I'm definitely staying open-minded and counting those wins. Also, I would say that recovery, you know, mainly from the impact, the shock, the insult of a surgical experience, that seems mostly finished. You know, I think I'm doing fine along those lines with restoration of normalcy in my being. But rehab is a much broader term than recovery. So I'll try to talk about that a little bit. As far as how I'm going or how I'm doing, I don't have any pain at rest anymore. You know, no aching, no throbbing. I barely know that that shoulder is there. It's just a little bit of awareness there's some cellular stuff going on in there. Nothing too crazy. And it is a little sore if I push it in the rehab, or it can get that way, but it doesn't seem to last very long. So I'm kind of learning my own personal balance of, you know, effort applied and how much is enough and that sort of thing. It's important to explore that for yourself when you have this experience, if you do. These limits of range of motion and strength are really a unique sensation. I wouldn't say that it's excruciating when I'm pushing against those things, but it's definitely a strong signal, and I'm just appreciating that as I'm moving along in this rehab manner. Here's something I always knew, but now I appreciate it even more, and it's this, that if you have a major orthopedic injury or a surgery, it requires you to do a couple things. You have to work very hard in your rehab, extremely consistency, and it's often quite uncomfortable, or it is every time if you're doing it right. Again, it's transient, but it you have to come up against that. And the progress you make is exceedingly incremental. I don't know if it's 0.001% per intervention or episode or workout or rehab session, but it's pretty small again. And I think we still want to view that in a positive light, but you just really have to look at it's the long game here that I'm playing and that any of us are going to play when we look at statistics with a major orthopedic experience in the lifespan. It's fairly high. It depends on who your resource is, but 60 to 80% of the population. So also I should just kind of come back and say healing is not the same thing as rehab. You know, healing is just, it's part of that recovery process. Tissues are repairing, and you're getting largely symptom-free, at least at rest or stationary positions. And I like to remind folks of that all the time. Rehabbing is going through that process of getting back your function. It's the thing that takes the work, and it's really necessary. It's not an option, at least as I see it, because I've seen a lot of people who just healed and didn't rehab, and they ultimately had a weak, stiff limb that didn't work and ultimately affected their quality of life. I really want to try to avoid that if at all possible. So as I talk about rehab, you know, I say rehab's ongoing, of course, but now I'm trying to get back to training. You know, when I put training in all caps, it's like, man, it's just, this is what I want to do. I want to train. I want to train for life and the things I love. I haven't missed a day of rehab yet, and I don't plan to, but some days aren't big sessions. I just always try to do something, and that's how I'm looking at this process. I've got a few stations set up so I can do a bit of range of motion or light strength work with the right arm once or twice per day, and it always helps. I see it and I feel it in my activities of daily living and my function. It's oftentimes it's very subtle, just the ability to reach out and grab a doorknob and open a door, which I was incapable of doing for weeks, and things like that. So it's really nice. Things around the kitchen, you know, being in the bathroom, you know, I don't have a lot of hair to wash. Don't have that issue, but shaving, brushing my teeth, all that kind of stuff. I can now do it ambidextrously because I really experienced a growth in my left hand function having to use it so much. So anyway, some things like that are going on. But honestly, as far as training goes, I really haven't been training. I wish I was, but you know, I've been trying. I'm sure, you know, I play at it. I go through some motions, but I really just didn't have the energy to seriously train for months or do some of the things I wanted to do because they were either inappropriate or contraindicated for my shoulder where it wasn't its healing status, or they just didn't plain feel good. So that's what had been going on, but now things are starting to turn the corner. So as I look at leg exercises, you know, whether that's, say, resistance training or mobility work or aerobic work that uses the legs, I really have no limitations now. I can squat, lunge, and load most ways. And the limited amount of jogging and jumping I like to do, leading up to getting back to sprinting in the spring, spring and summer. I can tolerate that now, and nothing's stopping me from getting on a bike either. I have the energy now that I want to push myself a little bit, and I think that before, instinctively, I just didn't. With arm exercises, or let's just say upper body training or things that use the arms, I was originally just doing using my uninvolved left arm with most unilateral movements while the right arm was in the sling. But now I can use very light dumbbells, and it's funny that I saved from years past a set of rehab-oriented dumbbells, 1, 2, 3, and 5 pounds, and I have really been using them, so I'm glad that I have them. I could always use wrenches, hammers, and cans of food if I needed to, but luckily I've got those little dumbbells. And, you know, I can mimic most of the unilateral stuff that, you know, like a unilateral pull down or various presses that I can do with my left arm with a reasonable amount of weight for me. Well, I can mimic that with these micro dumbbells on the right side, even if the motion's not full or perfect. Sorry about that. Forgot to turn that off. Also, with bilateral work, so that would be like, well, is that doing a push-up or an overhead press with two hands or a bench press or a bodyweight row, you name it. I can do some of that now, very light, very protected positions bilaterally, and that's good. I'm starting to work back into those things. And once I get full range and some more functional strength, I'll start working on increasing the loading and even the speed of movement, which right now it doesn't feel so good to do. I'm not supposed to do that with the tendon repairs for a bit more time anyway. But again, just talking about that and also making peace that some things are pretty much out for me. Throwing, I wasn't doing a lot of like overhand throwing prior to this, you know, let's say in the last decade at least, but I'm not going to be doing too much throwing because it's just not ideal for the where my shoulder's at. Playing tennis, again, maybe I can get back to playing a little bit, but the shock of playing hard probably isn't going to be in my future. And as far as like my hobbies go, building, remodeling, heavy overhead work, hammering, high impact tools and vibration, they're really not my best interest. So I'm okay with that. I'll find ways to modify and do the right amounts and also to give up a few things. I'm also working on plans for some of my, you know, hobbies related to getting out in the field and the outdoors, you know, hiking, fishing, hunting, camping, all that. So I've got some plans for shooting firearms and developing the ability to do that again with some modifications. Same goes for bows. I'm going to be using, ultimately my goal is to be using my longbow, my recurve bow, and my compound bow to some extent, but I've probably got to get some lighter pull stuff and work up, and that's going to be a longer term plan once this strength comes back. And interestingly enough, using fishing rods, you know, especially fly rods, when you think about it, it's not a hard activity as far as loads or strength go, but it requires quite a bit of coordination and range of motion and finesse. And I don't have it now. I can feel that. I can probably go fishing right now and use a kind of like a sidearm technique, but it wouldn't be optimal. So I'm going to work back to getting into those things. And then also on backpacking, especially like hunting and elk hunting, carrying a heavy pack, let's call it heavy-ish from this point forward, and being able to tolerate that strap pressure, you know, over, you know, the shoulder and the incision. Most of that's just sensory. If the straps fit correctly, it's not going to put a lot of stress out at the joint space. But I'm going to have to work up with that. And I'm probably never going to carry a 100-pound or 100-plus-pound pack anymore. Probably other reasons why that's smart for me, pushing 60. But 75 or 80 pounds is probably reasonable, you know, for, you know, pack or, you know, camp shuttling, meat packing, that kind of thing. And then, of course, much lighter for just moving about in the wilderness. So those are some ideas or thoughts that I've got there regarding how all this rehab process has been going. And I really appreciate the support that I've gotten from our community. So next up, I want to tell you about a term. It's a word, to my knowledge, I think I've invented. And it's called this. It's fatrophy. And that's spelled F-A-T-R-O-P-H-Y. So fatrophy is an interesting concept which I experienced this past year, latter portion of 2021. It's basically where you combine the loss of muscle mass or lean body mass, lean tissue, with the gain of adipose tissue. So your muscles shrink and you put on fat. Fattrophy. Sounds great. Actually, it's not. But so that's what I noticed was happening to me when I was riding the couch more than riding my bike. And that there was a lot of that, you know, to be honest, you know, in those first 6 weeks after the surgery, prior to which I was in pretty good shape, to be honest. Man, I just couldn't do much, didn't have a ton of energy, had to use compromised sleep positions, sleeping with the sling on and on an incline. I don't want to say it was miserable, but it was close. And so a lot of time on the couch in the night, in the day. Eventually I could type again and use my laptop, and you know, I certainly could use a phone. I was watching a little more programming or TV than I usually do, but hey, whatever, you know, that's what I was doing. I was riding the couch, not the bike or anything else. And so, you know, exercise is one side of that, but some will say it's a small side because the, you know, body composition is also related to, of course, our nutritional intake. And I was actually almost purposely trying to gain weight, or at least not lose lean mass. And I wanted to try to like repair tissue. So I was eating a lot, healthy foods, yes, and doing some supplementation, but I probably stayed in a caloric surplus for a little too long. And it sort of showed up as what I would call Dunlap's gatosis, yet another term I've made up. So your muscle doesn't really turn into fat. Detraining just shrinks it, but then you gain fat. And there are a couple ways you can gain fat. I'll talk about it. But Dunlap's gatosis is the condition in which your gut has Dunlapped over your belt. Dunlap's gatosis. Now, that's an interesting one because it was a jelly belly. You know, I had a little bit of flab. In fact, my abs, you know, are now flabs, but I've already started to turn that around. Well, the high, hard gut, you know, that you know it when you see it in folks or if you've experienced it yourself, and you've got this gut that's up. It's up at the top of, underneath your rib cage, at the top of the abdomen, and it's hard, and you can hit it, and it resonates like a drum. Well, that's bad. That's really bad because that's a sign of visceral fat. You know, your fat on the inside, and the outside is almost stretched taut. So I didn't have that because I was maintaining, you know, pretty good nutritional habits and trying to do the best I could with my health practices. My Dunlap's gatosis was more of, let's call it the jelly belly. So I was, you know, putting on a little bit of adipose tissue, but it probably wasn't the kind that drives you into an early grave. And I'm going to talk about that as well. So on body composition, it's really interesting. You know, you can look at your weight and how your clothes fit. And those are great measures. You can look at percent body fat. Several ways to measure them, and the accuracy does vary. You've got body mass index, other types of things. But basically, in all the projects that I've done over the last decade or so, I would say 5 years ago, I got too lean. I was really, really messing around with some dietary changes and exploring ketogenic diets for one thing, and also training with fairly high volumes. And I, at 5'11", I wound up at 152 pounds and 7% body fat. Now, I was shredded, but I was, you know, skinny and not that strong and cold all the time. And so I thought, well, this is really not good. I don't want to move into sixth, seventh, eighth decades of my life. Being a frail elderly person, I've got to put some weight on. And so I worked hard at that for several years, and I wound up kind of stabilized for several years at 175 pounds, around 12% body fat. Not quite as lean as I would have liked, but it was a good weight, healthy, felt good, performing well at that level. So now, just checked it recently, I'm still at 175 pounds, thus the fattrophy, but now I'm at about 15% body fat. So I need to gradually reverse that, or, you know, just kind of get it back to the point where the fat's down and the muscle comes up a little bit. And that those hard won, really hard fought gains in lean body mass, and they are tough. They're tough for people of my body type, and especially age. And so I've got some work to do, but I'm willing to do it. So I want to get back to, you know, 175 or so pounds, maybe even down to about 10% body fat. I think that's easy for me to maintain without being, you know, a Spartan monk or something like that. A little bit of wordplay. Okay, so that was fattrophy. And I guess what I'm trying to tell you is it can happen to any of us with a change in both activity and diet. And don't sweat it. It's not the end of the world. You can dig yourself out of that hole. But it's also something that's better to prevent than to treat. Okay, now, here is a great concept. And it's basically this. Being athletic and being healthy, and I want to discuss those things in two ways. The first way is being athletic but not being healthy. And this is something I have seen it a lot, and I've also had this personal experience. So about 10 years ago, all sorts of things came together due to my mismanagement or poor management of stress and sleep and slipping a bit on my nutritional habits. All those things, you know, kind of got almost out of control, let's say. But at the very same time, I kept training hard. I was into some things I was doing. I was capable of high output. So I was fit and very athletic, but I wasn't healthy. I was getting into the whole metabolic syndrome thing that I've talked about on the show and many of us have experienced. Some of us know we're experiencing it, some don't. But, you know, I woke up one day and it was more gradual than sudden. But one day I woke up and I said, gosh, I don't feel good. I just don't feel very well. You know, low energy, aches and pains, things just, systems didn't seem to be working right. I got some checkups. I was pre-diabetic, borderline hypertensive, and I had that high, hard gut. And, you know, I quickly realized, well, this is certainly an accelerated path to the end of the journey if you stay on it, John Boy. So it was all about lifestyle. I made some lifestyle changes, and those were things that I did with my stress and relationships and work and my habits. And then I made a concerted effort to improve my sleep and did so, tightened up the nutrition, you know, which eventually led to the model that I've used now, which I'll talk about more in the future, have in the past, the planet Earth-based diet. So all those things happen. And the point here would be just to remind everyone, myself included, hey, you know, you can be fit, you can be athletic, but you also want to be healthy. Health needs to come first. That's the pyramid that we want to build with the foundation of health in it. And do be aware that ultimately, your performance actually does best when you're healthy. And it's just, that's what everyone deserves. So let's think about that. While it's important here at the Lifetime Athlete to preach being athletic through the lifespan, we want to be healthy first and then layer on our athleticism. Now, last thing I want to get into today is sort of the opposite. And that's when you're healthy, but not athletic. So that kind of goes back to the fattrophy topic. And it's something I experienced maybe for the first time in life, honestly, recently, through all the stuff that I just described. So this time around, once I recovered for a few weeks from the initial blow of the surgery, shall you say, you know, I was healthy. My heart rate and blood pressure and blood markers, all those things were pretty good, you know, but I rapidly became decidedly unathletic. I felt it happening. And I just wasn't capable, and still am not, of doing the things that I love and wanted to do. And so a lot of those things are vigorous, and I kind of went through that already. I'm going to get back to most of them. You can bet on that. But making a few compromises, that's okay. Well, this was a great wake-up call for me, though, because so many of us are hit with surprises in life, and you can very rapidly lose some of your functional abilities, your fitness, your athleticism. It does require, as you get older, no matter how talented you are, we need to keep it tuned, you know, so we really want to, as we move through this lifespan, consistency is king. So what my mission is, or my personal goal, is just working back to this full or nearly full capacity in those athletic capacities, strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance, as well as some of the, you know, just functional things that I like to do. It's challenging, but it's really so desirable to me. I don't want to, live a life that's not vigorous and robust and be resilient and be athletic. And so that's kind of where I'm at. And what I would like to do is encourage, everyone as well to say, don't give up when things happen. You can work your way back, or at least most of the way back. And there are people like me and others that can help you and encourage you and provide you with the scientific information, the coaching, the therapeutic stuff, all of that. It's so valuable. So in closing up today, I've got just a few final things to offer. Thank you very much for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please like, share, and subscribe. And rate and review if you feel inclined to do so. Also, if you'd like to get a free t-shirt, that contest will be going for just a couple more weeks. I hope you found my discussion today interesting and maybe inspiring. Maybe you got a laugh or two out of it with Dunlap's scotosis and fatrophy. But, my journey is it's both humbling and exciting for me. And I really believe we're all in this together. So if I can help you with your health and performance over the lifespan, well, you know where to find me. Okay, Coach Jay-Z signing out.